Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I want to welcome you to episode 20 of the Think Orange podcast. My name is Dave Adamson. I am your host today, and I'm flying solo in the Think Orange bunker today. I've got my good friend and producer, Kevin, just sitting just outside the window over there. I don't know if he can even talk, but I just want to say a quick hi to him. Now, I'm on my own because my good friend and co-host, Ashley, is actually doing stuff for the Orange Tour, which is coming up soon at orangetour.org. Make sure you check that out. There is a lot going on as the Orange team travels right around the whole country. And it would be a great thing for you to get along and see them. And make sure you see Ashley as well. I'm going to be on a couple of dates, so I would love to have you come up and say g'day to me also. And this is a great way for you to get connected to all the great things that Orange is doing. Now, today we have an amazing episode planned. We're going to be hearing from Jeannie Stevens. She is one of the lead pastors at Soul City Church in Chicago, Illinois. And she's actually going to be talking about creative practices for storytelling. You know, we're all communicators and we want to be engaging to our audience, especially when it comes to students. And she's got some fantastic practical tips about how to do that. And then later on, we're going to be hearing from Afton Phillips. Afton is one of my favorite people here at Orange. She is actually the creative director for Lead Small, our small group curriculum. She is a great, great resource, and she's very expert at when it comes to specifically communicating offstage, having great conversations with kids. So today really is about communicating on stage and communicating offstage. You're going to get a whole lot out of it. I know there's going to be a lot of great information, but it's also going to be fun too. We don't call Afton Lafton for no particular reason. There's a reason for that because she's a lot of fun. I'm sure you're going to get a lot out of it. Now, today's episode is brought to you by the amazing Weekly, a customizable resource library giving you the social media plans, emails, and videos you need to communicate with parents. Now, we all want stuff to post on social media. We all want to have the right tips and tools to be using to get out information to parents and small group leaders online every week. And this is the best resource that you can possibly have in order to do that. Now, you can learn more simply by going to goweekly.com. I'm going to give that to you one more time, goweekly.com. And once you get there, make sure you check out that resource library. I love the social media plans that they have. As a social media person, I can highly recommend the Weekly resources there, goweekly.com. They're fantastic sponsors of this podcast, and we're so glad to have them on board. Okay, well, I think you've heard just about enough from me, so I'm going to throw it straight over to my good friend, Jeannie Stevens. Check this out. You are absolutely going to love it. Make sure you've got a notebook and pen handy.
The funny thing I think about creativity and the funny thing about the resistance that we face in creativity is when we're up against resistance, when we're up against that moment and we're like, I need to create something. I need a fresh idea. I need something that's going to be able to communicate, you know, this truth or this story. It feels like the only thing in front of us is resistance, right? And so what I want to talk about for the next few minutes is how do we break through that? You know, how do we break through the tension of the fact that there's a gathering every 7 days. But in the middle of this tension is the greatest story of creativity ever to be told, right? I mean, we have the most unbelievable God who is creative, and he has charged us to be creative in the telling of his story, down to the littlest members of our church, up through the adults of our church. And you can make no mistake about it. There is a deep and divine connection between a God who is creator and you who are creative. It is written in between the lines of God's fingerprint on your life. Your creativity is not your own. And I think that's one of the first things, that's one of the first humps that we have to get over when we say to ourselves, I just don't feel creative. I don't want to bother people. I don't want to do this. I don't want to try to step into that. The common word in that phrase is I. And our creativity comes from God. And so when we can relinquish that back to him, when we realize your creativity is not your own, that it has a source that is separate from us, a source much greater than us, that it is a gift that has been entrusted to us. And not only are we created by a creative God, but he has called us to co-create with him, which is pretty marvelous. But I think oftentimes, many of us, we get stuck, don't we? I think one of the places where we get stuck is sort of a myth, and it's the myth of inspiration, right? When we think about creativity, we think, well, I need to be inspired, right? I need to go on a walk, or I need to stare at some art, or I need to listen to this great song, or I need to be around creative people, and that's going to make me creative. And I think there's a myth to inspiration. One of the most influential pop artists, Peter Max, right now, he says, I never know what I'm going to put on the canvas. The canvas paints itself. I'm just the middleman. And oftentimes, that's how it is when we create experiences that are hopeful to lead people to greater connection with God. We're this middleman, right? We're sort of the conduit. We're the transferer of all that God is doing through creativity. And the blank canvas, whether it's literal or metaphorical, is one of those rare elements that in equal parts, it can be terrifying, right? When you're staring at a blank screen, or when you're staring at, you know, a blank stage, or where you're staring at a blank Sunday and you're like, I literally have nothing for this Sunday. And it can be a terrifying moment, but it can also be exhilarating too. Because it is daunting, and we can feel overwhelmed, but it can also be this terribly intriguing, wonderful moment where God can take shape and color and tone or sound or feel, and he can turn a blank canvas into something unbelievable. But I think for many of us, we need to get over some of these myths that have to do with creativity and inspiration. Harvard Business School actually did a study because so many people, they have so many things that they put themselves up against so that they can be creative. And they said, you know, we want to debunk the myth around creativity. And one of the first myths that they realized was that creativity doesn't just come from creative types of people. I think many of us will use that as an excuse, or we'll hear other people use that as an excuse at times, right? I mean, how many times have you heard somebody say, well, I'm just not creative? You've probably heard that, right? Or you may have even said it yourself. You're like, I'm in charge of creative people, but I'm not creative myself. Okay, that's just a myth. Sometimes we think, you know, money is the creativity motivator. If I just had more resources, you know, at our church, if I just had more in the bank account, if I could just, you know, have more options, well, then maybe this would help us. There's the myth that the time pressure, that it fuels creativity. I know a ton of creatives that are like, I like to work right down to the last minute, you know, and when I have that time pressure on me, that's when I do well. There's the myth that fear forces breakthrough. There's the myth that competition is better than collaboration. And that's not true. It's actually better when we can collaborate together to create. And then the last is that a streamlined organization is a creative organization, and that's a myth. And I think many of us have to start to get rid of these myths that we have around creativity, because these are all myths to creativity and inspiration. And just a couple of helpful things maybe to break through those myths. I think one of the first things when it comes to being creative is that we need to stop worrying about what's going to emerge that's going to be creative, and to start to imagine. How many of you actually work with kids or students, that's sort of your role? Yeah. One of the things that I love about working with kids, and one of the things that I love about working with students, is their imaginations are so full, aren't they? I mean, they are just overflowing with imagination. I will be in awe sometimes of my five-year-old and the scenes that he creates and the voices that he comes up with and the guys that, you know, he's created and all these, you know, imaginary things. And I mean, he is just in a full world. And my daughter, same thing, you know, she'll create and come up with things. And I think oftentimes over time, we have put almost like a covering over our own imagination. And we've covered our imagination with worry, haven't we? We worry that we're not going to be creative. And I think oftentimes worry, it leaves us feeling drained, doesn't it? When we approach a creative situation with worry, we end up leaving it feeling more drained. But when we can approach something with imagination, we leave feeling energized, don't we? I mean, imagination has this wonderful way of bringing energy back to us. Worry makes us dread the future. When we're constantly worrying about what we need to create, what we need to produce, what needs to happen on that Sunday, instead of choosing imagination, imagination gets us eager to the future. Instead of having this posture of like, oh, I don't want Sunday to come. I need more days. If only there was 10 days, you know, in between, you know, Sunday and Sunday, that would help. But I think if we can have the posture of leaving worry at the door and actually choosing to say, okay, God, ignite my imagination. It allows us to actually step towards what is possible. Worry focuses on the bad things that might happen, and imagination actually focuses on the good things that can emerge. So one of the best things that we can do to sort of debunk this myth of inspiration and creativity is to stop worrying and to start imagining. And sometimes when you're up against a moment and you're like, I don't have this, sometimes you just have to step out in creativity and create it. So not only do we have to do the work of responsibility and creativity, but there's also disciplines in the creative process. There's disciplines in the creative process. I think one of the first disciplines is the discipline of listening. It's the discipline of listening. Creativity does not just come when we sit down and decide to create. It's amazing to me because I'll have moments where I need to create something or I need to come up with a talk or I need to, you know, create something that we're about to do at our church. And I'll sit down and I'm like, okay, Lord, speak. Give me something creative. And I'll sit there and I'll sit there and I'll sit there. And then I start thinking about something else. And then I start thinking about emails I didn't return. And then I start thinking about what this person must be doing. And I quick go on Facebook and see what their status update is, you know. And I mean, it's amazing to me that oftentimes we think that if we just sit in a moment, then creativity is going to come. But we need to be listening always. Listening always. One of the things that has helped me with this, honestly, is I carry around a notebook with me at all times. And if something, you know, I see something or I notice something, I just quick write it down. There's creativity possibilities everywhere you look. Everywhere you look. It takes practice. Malcolm Gladwell wrote an amazing book, and he said that people that eventually perfect a craft or perfect an art, it took them 10,000 hours of practice to perfect that. 10,000 hours of practice. And as a little girl, my parents put me in piano lessons. And I used to hate to go to my practices. I was like, can't we just have recitals all the time? Because at the recitals, I get to dress up and people clap and there's usually food. And, you know, and I remember my parents saying, you're never going to get to the recital unless you go to the practice. And the same is true with creativity. However God has gifted you, whatever your art is that He's called you to create, it requires practice.
Well, hey everyone. Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Brooklyn and we're here in the studio with Tony Collier and Afton Phillips. We're so excited that everybody's here today.
Thank you. And I just do want to put out there that my name's Tony, but I am a woman, meaning that there's three women in the studio right now.
Three.
Shout out to all of our women.
Girl power.
We have another woman here in the studio too. She's cheering us on over there.
We're taking over, let's be honest.
We have more. So it feels like a crowd in here. I'm excited about today.
For sure.
We are talking about creating great conversations with kids today. Afton, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself real quick before we talk about that?
Sure. Well, I've been working at Orange for the past 4 years, 4 or 5 years, and my job is all about our small group resources. So I just get to spend all day dreaming and creating what I think a small group leader might need and would help them be better at what they do. Yeah. So I just get to make a bunch of cool stuff. And the best part is that I am a small group leader. I've been a small group leader for multiple groups, some middle school groups, mostly kids groups, and currently I am a small group leader for a group of second graders. Wow. And I've been with them for 3 years.
Wait, and so since so kindergarten?
Cute. Yes.
That is precious.
So it's good. So fun.
And also honorable.
Oh. Yes. Well, what's
your leader?
Okay. You are a leader.
Like, a lot of people will be like, oh my gosh, you've been with the same group for 3 years. Don't you just have to serve for a year and you're done? And at my church, they like it when they encourage you to like stay with your group for multiple years. And I have seen what a difference it's made. Like when my kids were in kindergarten, I was like really struggling. I was on the struggle bus. Sure. Should we still say that?
Is
that
still you cool? Can say it. Hashtag struggle bus.
I was driving the struggle bus. Mm-hmm. Because I would sit down with my kids and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a great conversation with my kindergartners. They're so cute. And then they'd be like, I don't know how to hold scissors.
And there you are for 20 minutes.
Yes. And then I'm teaching all of them how to hold scissors, and I would like leave and I'd be like, I don't know if this conversation mattered. I don't know for if sure. I said anything that would make an impact at all. But now it's 3 years later, and it's really cool to kind of see the things that they remember, you know, that we talked about in kindergarten, or like they just absorb so much more than you think. And it's cool to see them change over the years. And
for sure.
When you stay with them for multiple years, you really get to know them as kids, as individuals, and you get to know their parents, which is awesome because now I'm friends with all their parents on Facebook and I like know what's going on in their life all week. And they think it is so magical when like they come in and sit down and I'm like, Preston, how was your lacrosse game? I saw that you got the winning goal. And he's like, how did you know that?
Magical.
And I'm like, it is Facebook.
And it's also is how I know. Really helpful when they're in junior high and you know all the things that happened when they were in kindergarten.
Oh, for
it's
sure.
Very useful information.
Even as a reference. You know, hey, here's where
reference.
You used to be, licking the wall.
Yeah.
Okay,
just, but look at you now. I have this photo. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yes. For sure.
Well, I know just from experience, just being your friend, that you're really good at having conversations. But I love one of my favorite things that has ever been made for youth ministry, often made. I'm not going to talk about it yet.
Okay, don't.
But I'm excited to talk to you about conversations, and Tony has some questions for you as well. Mm-hmm. But we want to have great conversations with kids, and we know our listeners want to as well, because they know that those conversations over time lead to the types of relationships that are so influencing and also impacting, not just on them, but on us.
Yeah.
So how do we measure what a great conversation is? And like, is it a conversation if it has an agenda? Like you were talking about your small group, did what I say even matter?
Yeah.
So how do you measure a conversation?
You know, here's the thing, like, as a small group leader and as someone who talks to a lot of small group leaders, what like the number one thing I want to say to small group leaders is like, every single conversation you have matters, even if you think it didn't matter. Mm. It matters because even if you walked away and your entire conversation was about like goldfish or like, you know, like their Legos or whatever they made that week, if you made a kid feel valued and accepted in the church during that conversation, that was a success. Even if you didn't even mention Jesus' name, the fact that you made them feel safe in a place where they could have conversations about what they want to have conversations about, that means that they will open up when it's time to have a faith conversation. When they're ready to have a faith conversation, they know they can have it in that space with you. So I love to encourage small group leaders to say, you might not walk away from every small group experience that you have with your kids and feel like, that was the one. That was the one where I got them. You know? like that one was so
you're
good.
So safe
and
right
you
now.
Might have some where you're like, that was a really good conversation. Like today was a good day. And you might have some where you feel like, that was not a great day. But I just want to encourage small group leaders to say, every conversation you have with a kid matters.
Wow.
So the measure is, did you have the conversation?
Did you have one?
That's so great.
Good. Did you have one and were you
maybe the fear of not having a good one keeps you from having one at all.
I love that so much.
And I don't know if small group leaders, I mean, obviously they're willing to have a conversation if they're putting themselves in that kind of position to talk.
Yep.
But it can feel scary to sit there with a bunch of kids or teenagers there's like 16 cultures going on all at once through their phones, through each other, through whatever just happened 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. And you have this opportunity to say something. Mm. So what you just said is
awesome. Like having the conversation matters.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And I think, and I would say like having the conversation matters in itself. And I feel like the outcome and what you're saying is that they feel safe, mm-hmm. that they feel like they matter, mm-hmm. that they feel really important. So I love it so much. Well, listen, I'm an African-American woman. Okay. You can't see that, you know, but I am. And I get to work heavily in the North Point world and even with Orange. And I think one of the things that I've noticed on this journey is that sometimes I am the only African-American woman in the room. And when I begin to communicate to high school students and middle school students, my fear when I get on stage or right before I get on stage is, am I going to be relatable? Mm. And is that a barrier? And how are they going to take what I say? And how are my experiences very different from their experiences? So the question I have for you, Afton, is what are some common barriers that you see as the church attempts to create conversations with the younger generation?
Yeah, I think, gosh, I think a big barrier is kind of like the idea of having an agenda. I mean, I think it's just really wise for a small group leader to go into a conversation and think, in this conversation, I am going to speak less and I'm going to listen more. Wow. I think if they just kind of go into a conversation with that attitude, like just kind of, not, they don't have to like, you know, make a huge action step to do it, but just like go into each conversation with that mindset. Like we talk about this rule, like with active listening, where it's like the 80-20 rule, where you listen. You know, you listen 80% of the time and you talk 20% of the time. And that like is helpful in a conversation, especially in a small group conversation. That can seem really difficult for a preschool leader because their kids, you know, they probably feel like they're talking a lot.
Yeah.
But whatever it is for your group, like whatever you can do to just put yourself in a position where you are there to learn from them. You're there to listen to their experiences. You're really there to facilitate a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big difference between being a Sunday school teacher. You know, we've heard this term a lot, Sunday school teacher and small group leader. And for me, I mean, they're different words, but for me, the difference in what they mean is that a small group leader is facilitating a conversation because we think kids learn best when they're able to apply it themselves. Yeah. And so a Sunday school teacher would be like someone that's more of, you know, it's more of a monologue. And for us, we're saying we want to start a dialogue with kids so that they can own it themselves.
Hey, I have to say this because we have so many different listeners on this podcast, and I haven't had the privilege to be a small group leader, and I'm more so a communicator or what we would call a personality on stage. But I feel like what you just said even applies to us.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like even in our talks that we plan out, in our PowerPoints, in our fancy whatever, we can leave more room to get that 80% rule, 80-20% rule going on. So I love that you said that even for both contexts.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah, that's so good. I think listening, you had mentioned, you know, the barriers. There are some barriers that we face when trying to have great conversations with kids. And I know that for me, the small group environment gives me an opportunity to do the opposite of hurry. Brené Brown, I'm just like stuck on this quote. I've said it 10 times this week at conference,
right.
That hurriedness is the enemy of connection. And
wow.
So I feel like if
that's
hurriedness
awesome.
Is the enemy of connection, then small groups are our ally, because that's the chance where you can slow down. So I want to know, from your perspective, how does a small group setting encourage great conversations with kids? How does that environment of smaller, leader-led, just a few, not a lot, like how does that encourage the conversation more than other types?
I mean, I think in my experience, and even in adult small groups, if you get into a really good adult small group, sometimes you can like kind of feel that magic where it's like everyone in this room is learning from each other. We're learning from each other's experiences, but it's small enough that there's room for everyone to listen and share at the same time. And I think that's what's great about kids' small groups too. Even though their experiences might be a lot less in number, they can learn from each other in that small group environment. And that I think is what's so magical. Like for me, there's this kid in my group, and I know a lot of groups probably have this kid, but I've got like the know-it-all kid, you know, like he walks in and you're like, great, okay, cool. It's going to be that kind of Sunday, you know, because for second graders, a lot of what we do is like, okay, have you ever, or tell me about a time. And so he's got an answer for everything, every time, got an answer. And I learned that I can use that in him, like that, which is really like a gift that he's able to communicate with people, and he is a leader and he connects. And so when he comes in now, I really try to leverage that gift in him, and I connect him with someone new around him. So when he comes in and sits down, I'm like, hey, Jack, you know, could you teach Ava what we're doing with the dice today? Could you show her how the activity works? And it makes him feel awesome. And it kind of helps me control a little bit of the know-it-all. But it, like, leverages it to make him feel like this is a gift that I've been given and I can help others with it. And I think small group is a great time that we can, like, turn our kids' heads to let them see the other people around them. I mean, especially preschoolers can be so, I mean, they're so cute, but they're so egocentric.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're only thinking about themselves. So if we can put kids in a space where they're looking at others, they're helping at others, they are recognizing that there's other people around them. I mean, what an amazing way to grow up with that kind of empathy for others if you grow up in a small group environment.
That's so good. You know, I'm really enjoying this conversation. Being an African-American woman, I hate to make this a race thing, guys, but I think there's such an interesting dynamic in the Black church, if you will, than in what multicultural churches are doing. And small groups is a huge difference between two churches. And so I love that we're highlighting or that we're going into detail about what small groups can really do for kids and for our, you know, pastors and leaders that are African-American, that are in African-American churches that are listening right now. I do think that this topic is something we need to pay very close attention to because it's not something that's normal in our culture. And so, and it leads me right into this next question, and because I feel like this almost answers it. It says, what do you feel hinders kids and students from immediately jumping in at church? And I think it's going into this huge crowd in this huge room and not being able to connect on a small level. But Afton, you're the pro here. Okay. Can you answer for us what you feel hinders kids and students from immediately jumping into church?
I think it's that. I mean, it's like when you go to a party and, like, maybe you were invited from, like, the host and you walk in and they've invited all their friends and you're just one of the many friends and you don't know anybody.
Yeah.
Or like a middle school dance, you, like, go in, like, Brooklyn, you've been at middle school dances. You know what those are like. Yeah. Like, you walk in and it's like,
some of my worst memories are from middle school.
Oh my gosh. Leave room for Jesus, kids.
Not as an adult, but as a middle schooler.
Whoa. I like you
when
walk
I'm
in.
6 feet tall in the sixth grade and no one else is.
And nobody.
The boys are 4 feet tall in the sixth grade.
Yeah. It's and a now real we're all jealous problem. Of you.
Right.
Well, Model. No one was jealous of me in the sixth grade. I think that's the feel you feel.
Right.
Yeah. For sure.
Should we just stop and have therapy? Are we okay?
No,
I'm just kidding.
You're tearing up, Brooklyn. I see you.
No, but you're hitting on something real, because if something lasts that long in your life and you have a memory that vivid, you know, this is a time in a kid's life when stuff is going to stick with them and pain is going to be worked out somehow, whether it's in their own ability to cope or led and helped and coached and supported by an adult who cares about them.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I don't ever want the church to feel awkward for a kid. You know, I don't want the church to feel like, do I belong? I don't want them to ever think, do I belong here? I want them to know when they walk in that they belong. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why even consistent small group leaders are so important. And I know this is really hard for a lot of churches because they're like, I just need bodies in a room to look at these kids, to make sure these students aren't, you know, giving each other swirlies in the toilet. They're like, we just need people in the room. And I'm like, yes, we need people in the room, but really we need to raise our expectations for the adults that we're putting in the lives of kids and say, it is so important that these adults are there every single week with these students, especially for middle schoolers too, because, I mean, you've seen this, like, they change so much overnight. Yeah. And if they think, I'm only going to see Miss Brooklyn twice a month, I mean, if they connect with her, like, they're not going to go the other 2 weeks, you know?
Wow.
So it's so important that they see a consistent face every time they walk into the room, that they know, I know her and I know I belong here.
Oh, that's really good. And having those faith conversations don't usually come the first time you meet a kid. Mm. It takes some time, which makes me think about my favorite thing that you've ever made.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
I mean, thank you.
Yeah. So we know that you're the icebreaker queen here. she created, I wrote a really bad book once. It's called Opposite Day. It was basically a book of icebreaker questions based on the concept that when you were a kid, you would, like, call it Opposite Day and then you would have to say what you don't really want to say.
I love it.
So I wrote a youth ministry book called Opposite Day, and Zondervan thought it was a good idea. It wasn't.
What? It wasn't.
But the concept behind it was, sometimes we have to talk about nothing to talk about everything.
Oh, mm-hmm. So good.
And I mean, yeah, that book, it was there. I like was basing it off like SpongeBob SquarePants, like Opposite Day, Seinfeld did it. It was a good idea.
Yeah.
Except sometimes you don't need a whole book. You just need a question.
Well, and so tell me one about
what you made.
Yeah.
And also, how does that help a kid have a faith conversation when we're talking about like jumping like into a pile of bananas or walking like five hyenas?
Which is a great question because I bet a lot of people are like, why did Lead Small just create a bunch of cards? Like, what does that have to do with small groups? So I got to create this thing called the Lead Small Icebreaker Box. And Lead Small is a brand here at Orange that is just any resource that's for a small group leader. We just call it a Lead Small resource. So, you know, I made the Lead Small Icebreaker Box because I am really bad at coming up with questions on the spot to ask my kids. Mm. Like, my kids would consistently sit down, and I say the first thing that most small group leaders probably say. I said, "Hey, Jack, how was your week?" And then he would say, "Fine." And then I'd say, "What'd you do?" And he'd say, "Nothing." And then I'm like, "Cool." And like, I'm like,
wow.
Right. So it was
such
like
a good talk, Jack.
Right.
Such a good talk.
You're gonna be a pastor someday.
Right. Yeah. But it's hard to get kids sometimes. I mean, not all kids, but some kids, it's hard to get them going. So what we did is we created over 300 icebreaker questions, which is the largest collection of icebreaker questions in the world.
Guinness Book.
I Googled it.
Hello.
Might not be true.
I'm going to be on Team Afton for that. That's pretty
I think
amazing.
It's the biggest. I mean, 300 is a lot. And they're like the craziest questions. And they're for any age group. But like one I love is, if you could name the next dinosaur, what would you name it? And here's the thing, though. Like, I know it sounds kind of silly. But like the thing is, if you can get kids to connect up front in their group, you can get them to feel comfortable with each other. You can get them to know each other. You can get them to laugh. If you can get kids to laugh together, then later they're going to be in a spot where they're ready to have a faith conversation. They'll be ready to open up. So we see this happen all the time. It's like, okay, hey guys, if you could have one person's face as your wallpaper in your bedroom, who would you choose? And obviously we would all...
But
she's
right now,
Justin Timberlake.
I actually can't even think right now because, like, I can't even hear what you're saying because I'm already thinking, like, if I had to choose one person. And that's how fast a question can move you from where you are
to
somewhere else.
I'm still on the dinosaur
one. I'm thinking, like, wallpaper. That is a lot of someone's face.
Yeah, like, it's a lot. So it better be someone that looks good, like Justin Timberlake.
This is the second time you said his name.
I just think
someone has a little obsession.
I think answer to that question. I'm just trying
whenever
to stress the answer.
I never call him Justin Timberlake. I always call him JT. Justin Bieber Timberlake, and I don't know why.
Oh, okay. That's not the same person.
I did
person.
Not expect
because,
to say that at all.
Because it's like, I don't know, it's a Brooklyn thing.
Okay.
Like, if you had to give your favorite like pop star another pop star name, like in the middle of their name, what would it be? That's a bad icebreaker question.
301 in the box right now. We need a repackage.
Not 301.
We need a repackage right now.
I know. Brooklyn is fired from the next creative team.
I know. That's so funny. Okay, listen. So I want to dive into the icebreaker a little bit more.
Yeah.
All right, we've got people listening to this that are working with elementary students, middle school, high school, all kinds of things. So our question is, can you go through the phases for us? Tell us kind of your favorite icebreakers from like little bitty babies all the way up to high schoolers.
So the icebreaker box that we made originally is general. So it's for any age group, which was actually kind of a challenge because there were a lot of questions that apply to kids that don't apply to teenagers and vice versa. So I had to like create this box of 300 questions that you could ask to any age group of kid. So what we did this year that's new at Orange Conference is we did expansion packs for the icebreaker box.
Nice.
And so there's a kids pack that's more for preschool, elementary, and there's a students pack that's for teenagers. So then I was able to ask some questions like, I know that these are going to sound a little bit silly, but you got to remember that they're for kids. And these are questions that have worked with my group because I have like the perfect test little group every Sunday that I get to see.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'll say like, hey, tell me about the stuffed animals that are on your bed right now. Immediately they're like, oh, I've got, you know, my bear
and
all that kind of stuff. And my kids love telling me about the last time they lost a tooth.
Wow.
So I'll do like, What was the last time you lost a tooth? Did you pull it? Did your mom pull it?
Wow.
Are you brave? Did it? What happened? Did it hurt? You know, like getting. They love talking about themselves. So anytime so I can get specific to things they're dealing with, and then for teenagers, we did. Like, what's your favorite YouTube video right now?
Yes.
Which is just. I mean, that one could go on forever.
Oh yeah. So you kinda gotta put a stop to some of them. I just want to tell you guys mine right now. You know.
Yeah.
So
it was great because I got the chance to be really specific in the questions we were asking, mm-hmm. and then you are even able to kind of get to know your kids even better. And that's what's so great about icebreakers too, is like when you ask an icebreaker question and it's something, even if it's something silly, you kind of get to see the way each of your kids' minds work.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, you picked that for a dinosaur name because you're picking from this and this and this. Wow. And now I know those are things you think about. I know that's how your brain works.
So
it's kind of fun. It's like, it seems really silly. It seems like it wouldn't be a big deal,
yeah.
but they are a really great, really practical resource to help people. And it's not like, I mean, you can make these up on your own. Like you could try to make them up on your own, but I'm terrible at it. Like even in staff meeting a couple weeks ago, I work at Orange and Reggie Joyner, who's our boss, he is like, Afshin, you made these new icebreaker cards. What's one of the questions? Y'all, I have looked at these icebreaker questions for hours and hours. proofed them, written them. And I'm like, I'm staring at him with like a blank face because at the moment while he's staring at me, I can't think of one icebreaker question.
What color is the sky?
Yeah, okay, I'm like,
thank you,
oh,
Afton,
I think,
so
like,
much you can sit down.
What's your name might be one. I couldn't remember one. So it's
that's
like
so
when you've got like eight little faces staring at you in a circle, it is really hard to come up with an icebreaker question.
Sure. Great resource.
They're a helpful little practical tool.
Oh yeah.
They really are. And I'm sure there's some other ways you could break the ice if you didn't happen to have a question on hand.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could play games, you could do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, every youth leader has a voice, and so it's your biggest tool in my imagination and my belief system. It's your biggest asset as a ministry team, the voice and the belief of a leader. So to be able to ask a great question is huge and worth a lot of time and attention. I'm curious what tips you would offer kids. Well, not kids, sometimes kids lead small groups. If we're talking high school, middle schoolers leading kids groups.
Elementary.
So this applies to them too, but how do you make parents feel comfortable bringing their kids to a group? Mm-hmm. One group that they don't know, two, a leader, they're not sure, like, are they a creeper? Mm-hmm. We don't know.
Yeah.
And they're asking a lot of questions, getting personal. So is there like a way that you can make parents feel comfortable?
Something I really love to do is I love to get all the parents' emails and I email them like before our group meets for the very first time. And I'll say, hey, my name's Afton. I'm so excited about meeting your kids. Here's my name. Here's my cell phone. Here's my Facebook page. Here's my Instagram.
That's
here's
good.
My Twitter.
Creating the trust.
Let's connect however you want to connect. And I just think it helps parents to feel more comfortable when they know you're being open. Mm-hmm. Like I don't have anything on my Facebook I need to hide, you know, take it off before you send the link, you know, before you work with kids and students. If they know that you're being open, that's really helpful for them to bring their kids to your ministry. I'm also a part of a product that we do at Orange called Weekly at goweekly.com. And it's a really great resource for church leaders that are wanting ongoing training tools for small group leaders. And and it helps engage their parents as well. And a really great resource we have on there that I just love. It's really simple, but it's a small group leader business card. So as a church leader, you can customize these little like nicely designed cards. You put a picture of the small group leader, their name, their contact information, like some fun stuff about them, you know, like my favorite candy or, you know, my favorite Starbucks drink, and hand them to your small group leaders so that your small group leaders during pickup or whenever they do meet with the parents can hand those cards out and be like, hey, here's, you know, my info if you ever need me. Here's my info if you ever need me. And I think that just helps parents feel a little bit more comfortable. And even during group, what I try to do too is if my kids know the memory verse, if my kids go on stage for a game, I'm like their number one fan. I'm like fangirl down there. So I'm like, I get my phone out and I record if they know the memory verse. I record if they go on stage and do anything cool. And I send it to the parents later.
Wow.
Like, hey, look what Jack did today. He knows his memory verse. Way to go.
I love it.
And parents love that. They love it. They love seeing their kids interacting in the church environment, because they drop their kids off and they don't know what happens during that hour. They only know if the small group leader is communicating with them. So I think if even in the preschool ministry, like if you can snap a picture of, you know, their baby and their baby's clapping to the music, or their baby's, you know, finger painting, or their student is on stage getting slimed, like anything that you can tell them about what's going on in your ministry, they love it. I mean, most parents just love getting information about their kids and seeing that their kids love being at church.
And that's a big thing. I love it. Absolutely. Afton, you have done a wonderful job, okay, at not only helping small group leaders, again, to connect with their kids better, to have those conversations, and really to help the parents connect as well. But I do believe, again, I have to speak from the communicator standpoint, I do believe that you've also inspired a lot of communicators out there who don't get to experience small group, but get to experience the kids on stage. And that's just a true inspiration to me, for sure.
Well, and let's add to that real quick for speakers, and maybe that's what you were just going to say.
Probably
it's really great for the communicator to set up the small group to win.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
That's good.
The angels
we're the
are singing.
That's it, Brooklyn.
We're the gatekeepers. Thanks for tying that in,
Well,
Brooklyn,
because
seriously.
We are really setting them up to have the conversation
that's
that matters.
So good.
You know, like they're hearing about God, but now they get to talk about God. Now that they get to really dive into what it means and to live it out.
And a lot of communicators, what they try to do on stage is they want to wrap up their talk with like this big bow. Like, I have made attention at the beginning. I've told you what the Bible says. I've told you what you should do about it. And I've applied it to your life. Go do that thing. Now go to small group and talk about it. And you're like, but well, you told me all the answers. So.
Gosh, that's so good.
And so I think it's really, I think communicators need to feel more comfortable with leaving their talks a little more open-ended.
That's
and
good.
Knowing that the application is really going to happen in small group, where it is customized because their small group leader knows the situation of each of those kids in that small group. So if communicators can get a little more comfortable with kind of like not resolving the tension all the way, presenting the problem, saying, here's what the Bible says, you guys are going to go talk about that, what that means for you in small group.
That's so
is
good.
Just, it's something that communicators aren't inclined to do because you want to wrap things up like a book or like a story.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But if they can get more comfortable with that kind of awkwardness of leaving it a little bit unresolved, it makes a big difference in small groups.
Yeah, and even pointing the students to, hey guys, in your small groups, I know you guys have questions, and listen, I have about three talks I need to rewrite. Thank you so much, Afton.
Well, every listener here has a communicator environment
for sure.
Small group happens right after. So it may just be a good idea too. Hey, this is what we talked about this week, and I asked them a question and they're really going to want to dig into it this week in your small group, wherever it's landing, in somebody's home. Maybe your small group is just the parent with the kid. So
that's
sometimes
so
just communicating the bottom line, what did we say and what questions are they asking? It's so good. So good.
It. Well, listen,
we've had a good time today.
We had an amazing time. Once again, shout out to all of our women in ministry. Okay.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, for everyone that was listening, we're hoping that something here resonated with you. Afton, you're absolutely amazing. I am personally excited about everything that you're doing.
Let's do this again.
Let's go rewrite our talk.
And now we're off to rewrite our talks. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to the Think Orange
Thank
podcast.
Thank you, Afton.
It was amazing.
Yes. We'll see you later.
Well, what a great conversation with Afton. I'm so glad that we have such great friends who are able to step in and do fantastic interviews like that when Ash and I are not available. You know, I love what Afton said there, that sometimes as communicators, we can just overcomplicate things, but such an important part of communicating to any audience is always listening. It's not just about what you have to say, it's about what the other person has to say as well. Sometimes we can just be a megaphone, right, Kevin? Kevin, my producer's out there, he's nodding his head. We can be a megaphone. It's all one-way communication, but it's about being a telephone, having that two-way conversation with people as often as possible. Hey, you know, we love having two-way conversations right here at the Think Orange podcast as well. That's why we've got a contact form at thinkorangepodcast.com. And we would love for you to fill that out so that we can get to know you a little bit better, get to know what makes you tick, so that we can continue to keep resourcing you with the sort of things that are going to make a difference in your world. And here's the great thing at thinkorangepodcast.com. thethinkorangepodcast.com. You can also pick up the show notes for this and every episode that we've done. There's some great resources in there, great links, and actually ways that you can connect with some of our guest hosts as well. And you're also going to be finding some places where you can subscribe. And that's one thing that we would love for you to do. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. And as always, we want you to leave a review, leave a rating, and share this content with your friends and with your team, because that's what it's all about. It's about getting this content in the hands of as many people as possible, because we want to help you to be better at what it is that you do. And as always, the one thing that we always say here, and I know my producer Kevin's going to say it with me, that when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.